Welcome to the latest episode of the J-Pod, a high library podcast. I'm your host, librarian Josh Cohen, speaking to you from the campus of Elizabethtown College in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. Today I'm talking with two Etown College professors, Dr. Elizabeth Dalton and Dr. Tomas Estrada. Liz is an assistant professor of psychology and the program director of the college's Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology. And Tomas is an associate professor of engineering and physics. Welcome to you both. So today we will be discussing their recent research on mindfulness training for undergraduate students and its potential health benefits. For those listeners not familiar with mindfulness, it combines meditation techniques with attention to the present moment. And this could involve meditative awareness during a particular activity, as one example. Is there anything else you would add, either of you, to that description of mindfulness?
I think you hit a lot of the most important points there, Josh. I would say for me, mindfulness really is about focusing on the present moment with a sense of intentionality and without judgment.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think one of the things that we worked on in our group is the idea that you can do mindfulness through formal exercises such as meditation, but you can also do it more kind of informally as part of your day-to-day activities, like if you're washing dishes or going for a walk. So there's lots of ways that you can have that present focused attention.
Okay, great. We're going to be discussing the research study that you published together earlier this year in the journal Advances in Engineering Education, and the title of the article is Implementation and Feasibility of a Group Mindfulness Intervention for Undergraduate Engineering Students. And for those interested in accessing the article, I will be providing a link in the podcast description. So my first question, this is an interesting pairing of an engineer and a psychologist. What led you to pursue this particular research project together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for me, mindfulness is something of that I'm, at a personal level, very passionate about. And I personally started practicing mindfulness several years ago. And since then, it really changed my life in a lot of positive ways. So I was very interested in seeing to what extent could I share the positive benefits that I had received in my life with my students. And I've always been drawn to interdisciplinary research. I like to find out what colleagues around the campus beyond my department are doing. And through that, I found Dr. Liz Dalton here and saw the kind of work that she did, saw that she had done work in stress management and mindfulness before. I was like, well, let's reach out and see what we can do together.
Okay, great. And why, I mean, I know you're an engineering professor, but why the focus just on engineering students?
Oh, I will say, so while there are other disciplines where the mindfulness literature is much more robust, such as psychology, some of the health professions, in engineering it's really not. If you look at the studies and interventions that I've done in mindfulness and engineering education, they're very, very limited. So we felt there was fertile ground there to see what impact mindfulness could have on engineering students in particular. Beyond that, obviously for personal reasons, it's the population that I am most familiar with. But I will say in our 2019 study, which was a conference paper that we published before this one, we did also look at psychology and occupational therapy students, not just engineering students as well.
Okay. Was there a particular interest for you in that focus?
Yeah, I mean, as Tomas said, you know, I think a large part of it was that there wasn't a lot of research on using and applying mindfulness to engineering students yet. What research was out there was promising, so there was some evidence that it could be something engineering students were open to practicing and might be excited about. So we saw an opportunity to contribute to that literature.
Okay. And had there been a good number of studies on college students in general? And did those studies, were they concerned at all with what the area of major of the student was?
I mean, I think because mindfulness is often studied in psychology, you get an unrepresentatively high proportion of students in those studies who are psychology majors. And I think it's not necessarily a concern, but it's always possible that students with that academic background and interest have more prior exposure to mindfulness or just kind of more, more experience with some of those stress management practices because they're very interested in studying those topics. Mm-hmm. Whereas engineering students, you know, we wouldn't want to assume necessarily that the results that we see with other student populations would apply.
Absolutely. And just anecdotally, in one of my classes this semester, I was sharing a little bit about my own mindfulness practice. And I asked the students, there was 25 students in this class, how many of them practice mindfulness to some degree. In this particular section, out of 25, one student did. And again, like that's not saying that's the case for all engineering students, but in other majors, yeah, like I know in psychology, you talk about mindfulness in your courses, so you're going to see much higher representation, which we supposed or surmised would lead to perhaps either just different types of attitudes that engineering students might have towards mindfulness practices than psychology students might.
Okay, interesting. Now, Tomas, you were talking about the benefits that you've received from practicing meditation and mindfulness. I know you have an interest in meditation as well. I don't know if you look at those as one of the same kind of connected things, but I'm curious to know, how did you get interested in that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And just to, in terms of terminology, to go off of what Liz was saying earlier, I think of meditation as one specific form of mindfulness practice. So we tend to think of formal mindfulness and informal mindfulness. So formal mindfulness would be things like meditation, breathing exercises, body scans. There's all sorts of different varieties. And then informal mindfulness is going to be applying mindfulness concepts to everyday life activities. So yeah, so I sometimes will use the terms interchangeably, but really there's other forms of mindfulness practices beyond just meditation. So I will say, in terms of how I originally got started in it, I credit Dr. Jeff Long here at Eton College, who was teaching a mindfulness session primarily for students, but faculty were also invited. And I was honestly just curious as to what it was about. And I learned a lot through Dr. Long's sessions. I went several times, got to understand the basics, cleared some of my own misconceptions as to what mindfulness and meditation were and were not. And after that, I built it into just my daily routine, my daily practice. I downloaded some mindfulness apps onto my phone, and I used that as part of just, you know, what I do every single day. And in terms of the benefits, yeah, I would say certainly in the level of balance, centeredness, my own ability to manage stress, I feel... Yeah, there's still stress, but the way that I process stress is very different than it was a few years ago. And there's a certain sense of the level to which I notice things is a lot deeper than it used to be. And I credit my mindfulness practice with that as well.
Interesting. And you meditate every day?
Yes.
Okay. Liz, how about you?
Sure, yeah, I first got interested in my graduate training in clinical psychology. So both in terms of using it as a personal practice and also being trained to use it with clients. But I took a semester-long class. I did my graduate training at University of California, Los Angeles, and they actually have a pretty large mindfulness research center there. So I took a class, and we worked our way up from like 5-10-minute mindfulness and meditation activities up to like 90-minute, two-hour sessions where we were totally silent, you know, and trying to focus on the present moment. And I think that really informed, kind of similar to what Tomas was describing, just the way that I related to my own internal experiences. And then as a psychologist, you know, I encountered a lot of literature about the different benefits that it can have. So I'm not going to lie and say I don't practice every day. I very much respect your daily practice. But it is something that I do try to incorporate, even for just a few minutes, especially if I notice that I am feeling anxious or stressed or I've got a lot on my plate. I find those are moments when it can be really helpful to intentionally recenter.
Excellent. Towards the end of your article, you mentioned the idea of integrating mindfulness practices into the course curriculum of higher education programs. I take it as a given that Liz, in your courses, you would naturally be maybe integrating not just teaching about it, but having students practice it. Tomas, in yours, though, it might be seen as something that would be more unusual to have integrated into the curriculum of your courses. Have you tried that, and how has it gone, if you have?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say it is more unusual. I've made some attempts, some of which I will try to turn into research work and papers as well in the future. But one of them was a mindful journaling activity that we did in a, it was essentially a professional development seminar that we have for engineers. So we did an activity where they were asked to generate a word cloud based on certain prompts. The prompts were all about turning the lens within, asking them things about themselves. They would generate a word cloud based on that. Then, based off of that word cloud, they would pick certain words and intentionally take the time to write a reflection on how these words connected in their own life. So this was, again, we were applying the mindfulness principles of doing it fully in the moment, without judgment. Just, you know, focus on the present, and on turning that lens just fully, you know, fully within, turning that lens, like any time that they deviate, just bring yourself back to the present moment and writing on this topic. So that was an activity that went quite well. I think the students really enjoyed that. It was very different. They reported just being very different than what they normally do, and that it allowed them to see synergies between different areas of their life that they had not previously considered. So that was one, a bit of a mindful writing, mindful journaling activity. And then this semester in my upper level control systems class, I've done several exercises where we take some of these engineering concepts of looking at electromechanical systems and adapting that to seeing the self as a system. Again, turning the lens within, doing some reflection in a mindful way. So perhaps like these exercises are less of your traditional, say, formal meditations and so on, but it's applying those mindfulness principles to different types of activities.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And then for your students, Liz, is mindfulness training like a required thing in certain courses, or is it... more of a graduate level thing that somebody would be required to?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely integrate it intentionally into some of my courses. So, for example, I teach a course on the psychology of stress. It's pretty obvious, right, how mindfulness might tie in there. We study a wide variety of different stress management interventions and techniques that can be used, and then the students do practice all of those on their own. So we bring it into that course. We also bring it into undergraduate counseling psychology skills course so that students can practice how they would actually instruct someone else in how to use that as part of a therapy session. So I would say, yeah, kind of bring it in a variety of different courses.
Okay. But it might be more intensive in the master's level, maybe.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, at the master's level, you know, students are then sort of doing more of the field work and that kind of thing, working directly with clients as they ultimately work towards licensure. So it could depend on the setting they're in, but it's certainly a pretty scalable intervention. It's something that I think can be adapted to a lot of different populations. So it's certainly not uncommon to see it used in counseling settings.
Great. Now, there was a term that you used in the paper that you explained in the paper, but I'll ask you to explain it here. It was not a term I had heard before. Can you explain what trait mindfulness is and how it was relevant to your study?
Sure, yeah. So the term trait mindfulness is typically used to refer to how much a person just kind of engages naturally day to day in an intentional and non-judgmental way. So that could be kind of how tuned in they are to sensations or emotions that they're experiencing. So we contrast trait mindfulness with intentional practices of mindfulness activities. So a person might just describe like, yeah, when I'm walking to class, you know, I'm pretty observant of what I'm feeling. I'm noticing things like the wind or the chocolate smell on campus. You know, I'm really tuned into what's happening in the present moment. Whereas other students might say, no, you know, I'm checking my phone or, you know, I'm listening to music. Like, I'm taking myself out of the present and I'm focusing on something else. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more just about how you are experiencing things moment to moment. So in our study, one of the things that we wanted to assess was how practicing mindfulness through our weekly sessions could impact students' trait mindfulness, as well as how many times they intentionally practice mindfulness throughout the week.
Okay, that's a very good explanation. You had mentioned earlier, I think Tomas had mentioned earlier, that you had done an earlier kind of pilot study. Is it okay to call it a pilot study?
Sure.
That you had completed together in 2019. What led you to decide to do a follow-up study?
So that initial study was more of a survey-based mm-hmm. study, so kind of looking at, again, trait mindfulness, actually, so okay. Good timing on that question, and how that compared amongst engineering, psychology, and occupational therapy students. And then we also wanted to see whether trait mindfulness was associated with students' intellectual curiosity, their preference for challenging information, and even their grades or kind of how they're doing in their coursework. And actually, we found that amongst those three student populations, there were somewhat comparable overall levels of trait mindfulness. Engineering students did demonstrate some correlations between their trait mindfulness and aspects of their academic performance. So that wasn't an intervention study, but it was something that got us kind of more curious about what could be done to influence mindfulness practices and trait mindfulness in that student population.
Okay. You mentioned using Jon Kabat-Zinn's Full Catastrophe Living, which is a book I'm familiar with, and the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Workbook by Stahl and Goldstein, which was new to me. Could you tell me a little bit about how you used both of these books as the basis for your own mindfulness training sessions?
Yeah, so in terms of what we did, it was four one-hour sessions, and these were primarily based on the Stahl and Goldstein reference.
Okay.
So yeah, so those give you a very clear session-by-session outline of where we're going to do mindful eating this session, we're going to do a body scan in this session. So that was the reference that really informed the way that we structured ours. Kabat-Zinn's work is very broad. If you're familiar with the book, there's a little bit of everything in terms of how to incorporate mindfulness practice and what benefits you get in terms of stress reduction and so on. So I would say Kabat-Zinn's work was informing all of this, but in terms of the structure of the week-to-week sessions, that was mainly from the Stahl and Goldstein reference.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we wanted to use a workbook like that and chose the Stahl and Goldstein one is that it's something that would be pretty accessible, I think, and pretty understandable even to an audience outside of psychology. It's not written for someone who's already an expert in mindfulness. It's really written with kind of a beginner in mind. So we figured that could make our results perhaps a little bit more usable by other educators who could use that workbook to guide their work with students if they chose to do so.
So were you adapting stuff from that workbook, or was it pretty much the workbook?
We did adapt, but we kind of, and we highlighted in the paper actually some of the specific exercises that we used and sort of explained that so that a lot of the prompts would be available through that workbook. But we did make some adaptations, and we always had, you know, kind of check-in conversation and questions with students. So
absolutely.
It was a little bit open-ended at times.
Yeah, certainly. And as part of the sessions, there would always be opportunities to just have an informal type conversation of, you know, how did this go? How did this feel? And that's going to be different depending on the specific group of students that you have. It was different session to session. So it was... for me, it was one of my favorite parts of the sessions too. Was actually getting the students, many of whom were not previously familiar with mindfulness at all, to share with us how they had experienced each of the activities.
Mm. And did the people that were in the study, was there any kind of knowledge that you had going in, whether they were having any kind of issues with stress or things that are often used for treatment of those things with mindfulness?
So So we had them complete anonymous surveys before and after the intervention that did include measurement of their general perceived stress levels. The only way we had further information is if participants chose to share. And certainly some, you know, they weren't required to, but some participants would kind of describe ways that they might be using some of the exercises or what they wanted to get out of the group. So if they chose to kind of talk about that in the group setting, we still kept all of that information private. But, you know, and sometimes we would sort of share how we used the techniques and the exercises and the impact that they had on us as well to help model that.
Okay. And it seems like, I assume it would be probably a different environment if it was one in which you had a group of people that were all dealing with, let's say, severe stress or severe medical issues or something like that and coming into the situation. And because I think I've heard about people like in the reflection piece having these like serious emotional responses or things like that when they're being made aware of things maybe they don't want to be aware of, or and I assume that probably wasn't the case in this scenario.
Yeah, I would say it was not. It was, while some students may surely have had their own issues going on, for the most part, it was, the students were selected just from students taking my classes. Right. They were bribed with extra credit.
Right.
So, nice. Yeah, so there was no predisposition from a particularly stressed group to become.
Yeah, I'm just sort of guessing that the environment would probably be a less intensive one than in a maybe one where it's like a group of people dealing with
trauma.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
For sure. But that being said, I mean, other researchers have examined the impact of mindfulness-based stress reduction and this type of training on people with, as you kind of alluded to, specifically diagnosed like mental health concerns. And there is evidence that it can be effective when people are dealing with those kind of problems. But yes, that wasn't something that we were seeking to examine in our study.
But I was just assuming that also the sort of experience itself would probably just be a different. So I was saying it would have, it might be more beneficial for somebody who's, I would imagine, you know, having more issues with stress or maybe more challenging. I don't know.
Sure. Although student populations do report fairly high levels of perceived stress. So
yeah,
there's definitely
true.
Room to move the needle.
That's true.
And what we found in our results was that essentially the mindfulness training seemed to buffer against the typical increase in stress that students experience over the course of the semester. So typically when we poll students as the semester progresses, perceived stress tends to increase, which is not a huge surprise, right? More projects, more deadlines, final exams. Yeah. But the mindfulness training seemed to protect against some of that increase for the folks who were assigned to that condition.
Interesting. When I did a mindfulness exercise, and it was mentioned in your study, which was the eating the raisin mindfully.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very difficult. It was like torture for me. Like, I'm used to wolfing down my food.
Sure.
So the idea of having a single raisin in my mouth and paying very, very close attention to it and chewing it very slowly and was like a very antithetical to my eating experience. So. Mm-hmm. And I saw that you did that. What was your experience with that particular exercise?
Yeah, I would agree that it was challenging. I believe it was in session one as far as our four sessions. And that made it challenging for a lot of students. I think we are conditioned in our society to move from activity to activity very quickly. Some students reported, normally I just eat my lunch before I know it, I'm done, and I don't even realize that I'm done. So it was definitely very, very different. In that particular exercise, they even ask you to engage with the raisin using all five senses. That includes listening, right? So that was definitely different. I think it's just one of the ways that mindfulness practice invites you to a bit of an attitude of openness, and like one of the tenets is beginner's mind. Do something as if you've never done it before. And in this particular exercise, I believe in the prompt, it invited you to see this as if you'd never seen a raisin before. You were coming from outer space. It's the first time that you see one of these things. And that can truly be a fascinating experience. And yeah, I know for me, just discovering what layers of texture were there that I had never previously considered. Yeah, it was fascinating. And now I mean, I know that Josh, you and I run into each other at lunch pretty often. I'm a slow eater now. And I think it's my mindfulness practice has caused me to, really invited me to take my time appreciating my food. And now I enjoy that part of my day a lot more than I used to.
Interesting. Yeah, the raisin activity for me did not have that impact. So maybe we should
need to
practice.
Yes. On air.
Exactly. I do have a box of raisins in my desk. Yes, but maybe I'll try that later.
All right. Okay.
What do you like the raisin exercise?
I do. Yeah, and I think it's kind of a fun way to dive into it with students, which, you know, is why it's often included in the first kind of mindfulness activity that you're doing. And I think it's one that it's also useful to try to apply that non-judgmental attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, many of us have some judgments about raisins that they're not the most delicious, like, why are they ruining this baked good, et cetera? So to try to...
I don't have that one. I love them.
I do.
You do.
Right?
Oh, you're not a raisin.
To try to approach it non-judgmentally, and like Tomas was saying, as if you've never seen it before, is challenging. Mm-hmm. But I think it can be really rewarding to think about, oh, well, what would that mean, you know, mm-hmm. if I'd never experienced this food before and if I was just totally open to anything that it kind of brought up. And I often hear students actually comment on that afterwards, that they say, you know, I don't really like this kind of food, but actually I appreciated it so much more as a result of approaching the engagement with it in this way.
And was there a particular activity you did with the students that they particularly liked or particularly disliked?
I think in this group, or in some of the groups that we had, I recall a number of them kind of enjoyed applying mindfulness to physical activities.
Yeah.
So we did like some outdoor mindful walking activities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for some people, myself included, it can be kind of nice to be moving your body and thinking about that in a mindful way.
Yeah, I recall several students mentioning applying mindfulness principles then to weightlifting and activities like that, working out. And yeah, experiencing those activities that they always used to do just more intensely, more fully.
I would think it's almost dangerous if you're doing weightlifting to not be mindful to some extent, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that injure themselves weightlifting and not being mindful of what they're doing. Right?
Exactly.
That's interesting. So why do you think mindfulness practices are an important area of study? So kind of a broad one.
Yeah, so for me, they're an important area of study because they're an important, like broadly, an important thing to practice. It's something our society needs. I think right now, there's so many distractions that all of us go through. So we live in a world where whether you're a student or you're a professional, you've got all these deadlines, all these things pulling you in terms of your attention this way and that. And then how do a lot of people reset or recharge? Well, while getting on their phones and getting pulled away by social media, by ads that are trying to sell them this or that. So there's so many distractions out there that we become honestly alienated from ourselves, from our own minds. We become more and more anxious. I feel a lot of people think that engagement with, for example, scrolling on social media is going to relax them. It does not. And so I think that in that space, it becomes particularly important to touch, touch base or get back in touch with ourselves and with our activities that will bring us back to center, bring us back to a place of balance. From that point of view, yeah, there's ample evidence that mindfulness practices are immensely beneficial in that regard. Again, mitigating that anxiety, increasing that overall trait mindfulness, that disposition to notice the world around you, to get back in touch with the present moment. So given our broader societal context, yeah, I think it's essential. And then the more across different disciplines, the more that we see empirical studies that validate all of this, the more people are going to be receptive to perhaps go beyond whatever preconceptions they might have had about what mindfulness and meditation are. You still see some people that or are skeptical of mindfulness practices. They see it as something that's like a little bit out there, a little bit, oh, well, that's not for me, or maybe you've just...
Like a hippie kind of hippie-dippy. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hippie-dippy's official term,
actually. It's a technical term. No, I appreciate that. or they might see it as something that they are not capable of, you need to be somebody who's... Yeah, just this Jedi-level guru that can perfectly clear their mind at will. Otherwise, mindfulness is not for you. So the more research is out there that shows that, no, there's a very wide range of applicability for whether, again, students, professionals, folks of all sorts of different backgrounds. Yeah, I think a lot of different individuals are going to be impacted by this in a positive way, and I think society is going to be impacted by it in a positive way as well.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. You know, I think it's pretty remarkable how much time we spend mentally, day-to-day, moment-to-moment, either in the past or in the future. You know, we're kind of rehashing conversations we had earlier in the day or worrying about and anticipating things coming up, and we spend very little time in the present moment. But as Tomas was saying, you know, it is a skill that can be developed and practiced. And I think it's one that can be implemented in such a variety of settings and that people can kind of even use and continue to practice and grow in on their own, which I think makes it really useful and adaptable to students and to other folks as well. You know, it can be pretty quick to just say, well, I already have to walk from this building to the next. You know, I have to get there. So I might as well try to do that in a mindful capacity. Like, it's something that you can really flexibly bring into your day-to-day agenda.
Okay, great. We didn't really talk about the conclusions of your study. Did you want to talk a little bit about those?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we did find, you know, overall, we went into it in part trying to examine whether, as I said, the mindfulness practices had an impact on students' trait mindfulness, which it did. So students participating in the intervention showed an increase in trait mindfulness. They also showed an increase in the number of times each week that they intentionally practiced mindfulness when they weren't forced to with us, right? So just, in their dorms or in their day-to-day life. I mentioned that it did buffer against the increase in stress. But we also just wanted to see kind of how students responded to the meetings and the exercises, if they liked it, if they, you know, reported that they would continue wanting to use it. And they did. I mean, yeah, they did, by and large, you know, enjoy it, and they did attend the sessions. So I think it was pretty promising in terms of this being an intervention that, at least in our population of engineering students, they were pretty amenable to.
And is it an area that either or both of you are interested in continuing to do any study of?
Yeah, certainly. Like I said, I've been exploring how to adapt these mindfulness concepts to other types of activities, and am looking forward to, doing studies based on that. Yeah, and I know, like, our collaboration was great to work together. It was really great to use sort of like my background in engineering education and Liz's background in psychology and explore those synergies. So I know that, like, we would be excited to keep deepening this type of collaboration. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, it was great to have you both here. Thanks so much for coming. It was a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you so much, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the J-Pod, a High Library production. I'm your host, librarian Josh Cohen. Be sure to check back in with us for another episode from the Etown College community. If you have any ideas for future episodes or feedback, please email me at cohenjp@etown.edu.